You're listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody, and welcome to We Are STS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is episode 19. We hear a lot about decolonization and Eurocentrism these days, and rightly so. They're important ideas. In this episode, I turn the microphone over to Roha Ali Khan. She was a master's student in science, technology, and society last year, and she was one of the students working in the STS newsroom over the summer. You might remember the STS newsroom from earlier episodes. We want to give students work experience in science communication, so each year we set up as many paid internships as we can, and we work with students to create content for publications, like our annual magazine, STS Alchemy. As part of their work, we also ask students to create a podcast episode. On any subject they choose, we want about 30 minutes, we want interviews, we want something STS, but most of all, we want their creativity and their ideas. Roha's episode is a great example. She already knew a lot about decolonization and decentering. For the STS newsroom, she focused them closer to home. How might we decolonize and decenter STS, she asks. Where might we start? Listen closely to the conversations Roha creates and let us know what you think. We start with Roha setting the stage for the issues she wants to engage.
For years now, philosophers and scientists have been studying the process of scientific knowledge production, how information is produced, processed, and classified as objective facts has been a topic of much attention and debate. But just as with any other form of knowledge, subjects like science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, commonly known as STEM subjects, themselves have developed and evolved over the history of time. These subjects were shaped by people, by scientists from different backgrounds, beliefs, cultures, or political inclinations. So even though science is currently seen as an objective truth that deals with facts and objects, one cannot help but wonder or question the intentions with which it was made what it is today. Concepts such as race, genetics, and human biology that are so closely tied to our lives today were introduced and established by certain groups of scientists and are practiced according to these established ways for decades now. It is through centuries of scientific discovery and endeavor that today's scientific practices are formed. One example of how certain ideas cultivated through science led to serious consequences is that of the transatlantic slave trade. The lack of humanity that was attributed to black African slaves stemmed from the work of early renowned scientists such as Samuel Morton, whose findings on racial hierarchy were used as a justification for the slave trade. Such concepts were also used to justify and maintain the status quo in the United States for many years, which at that time meant racial division, hierarchy, and slavery. Such notions are still seen to plague modern science, even in today's day and age. The hierarchy that science has established in the world today can be traced back to the colonial regimes. Just to share an example, the historian Pratik Chakraborty, in his book Material and Medicine, talks about how Opossum erectum, which is a medicinal plant, was first discovered. Now, it was in the early 18th century at a Jamaican plantation when a supposedly quote-unquote poisonous plant was found in the possession of an enslaved laborer. His British overlord saw it as a threat and immediately hung him to death. Even after killing the laborer, the British were curious about the plant and they ran a complete investigation to eventually find out that the plant was not only harmless, but also had healing abilities and could cure worms, warts, ringworm, freckles, and cold swellings, amongst other things. The name and legacy of the laborer who had been executed was nowhere to be found in the history of this medicinal plant, and would never even have come up if it were not for the investigation that followed. This is just one of the many examples of how science was being conducted by European scientists in colonized states, while also simultaneously exploiting indigenous ways and norms. Many modern apologists still claim that science is a gift from the West to the colonized world. But one cannot deny that modern science has been and continues to be inevitably entangled with colonialism, especially British imperialism. How do we then make sure that we teach science in a way that is responsible and one that ensures that non-Western perspectives and experiences are also included in the narrative? Since all of these questions seem so relevant to STS in terms of what we are studying in our classes and in terms of the departmental culture in general, I was curious to just know more about what other people within the STS community thought about these questions. And I had the pleasure of speaking with Professor Emma Tobin on the subject, who is not only a professor, but also the co-head of the STS department. Emma, through her personal choices and her administrative role, continues to advocate for and work towards diversity and in learning and in thought within all the different members of the department. And she had some really insightful ideas to share with me during our conversation.
So I guess as a philosopher myself and somebody who teaches in year one of the syllabus for BSc, I'm uniquely aware that much of the history of philosophy of science is done by white Western men. And it's actually quite hard to decolonize that curriculum. That doesn't mean it's impossible. And there are ways of kind of having that conversation about how, you know, those power dynamics play into how that material is presented to us. And history is the same. The story of the victors is often, you know, embedded in white male privilege. But one of the chief goals, I think, of HPS at STS has been trying to bring about the voices to light that have been ignored and neglected in those kind of curricula. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's thinking about, you know, other contexts, other mm-hmm. voices, you know, what they would bring to the table, you know, how they add to, say, the epistemology of science mm-hmm. In philosophy of science. And it's quite difficult to find those voices, but they are there. And I think there's, you know, in philosophy of science as a discipline, for example, there's much more now than there would have been, say, when I was doing my undergraduate. Yeah. But actually, a lot of that is quite advanced academic stuff. And it's mm-hmm. quite hard to allocate that to, say, year one or year mm-hmm. two students. So yeah. It's quite hard to diversify yeah. the curriculum. But it's really important, I think, for us to do it. Yeah. And I think we should also take care not to be too complacent. Because I think that colonial past and the kind of post-colonial present is still playing a role in kind of, mm-hmm. you know, those privileges and powers mm-hmm. Within those disciplines. And so we need to be mindful of that. We don't want to think the problem is fixed. Yeah. It's certainly something we need to continue addressing as well. So say it really is one of my goals. And I've been, you know, because it's just so many of our staff research. Mm-hmm. Colonialism, post-colonialist approaches, mm-hmm. and yet we're still incredibly white. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just needs to change, and it's making that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, but we're still struggling with, I think, getting applications from BAME mm-hmm. students, getting applications from BAME staff even. Mm-hmm. So I've worked really hard on how we phrase our ads. to try and, you know, encourage people like from the global south to apply and stuff. And that seems to have worked really well in the last couple of years. And we now are expanding our BAME staff members, which is really good, I think. Because I think, you know, students need role models as well. And so as a department, we're committed to kind of social justice, to inclusion, and inclusion is part of our core strategic objectives. But I think it's also important that we bring this into kind of the culture of our department. So it shouldn't just be something that's an academic pursuit and something we think about as an academic thing, but we really want to work hard in terms of how we think about inclusion in our culture at STS and making it more diverse and inclusive as an academic home. Yeah, so I mean, I think in STS, obviously, we study questions of privilege, power, we think about systematic oppression, we look at structural inequalities. But I think everybody acknowledges that much more work is needed in STEM more broadly. And so one thing I've been doing as part of the MAPS faculty is working together with the EDI team, which I sit on the MAPS EDI team. And we've been trying to think about how you can educate people about these issues, because I think it's not, you know, sometimes it is kind of ignorance. It's that people aren't aware that these issues are there. So we ran a lunchtime lecture series over the course of last academic year on tackling racial inequality in higher education and STEM. So that brought in a series of speakers to talk to us about issues around privilege, power, and particularly how it plays out, for example, in laboratory settings, in large research groups and so on. And that was really good. And it also just gave a mechanism for actual, you know, for STEM staff to discuss this, to think about how it plays out in their labs, to think about strategies for improvement, and really to facilitate a discussion of how we can change at UCL and how we can do better.
Now, when we talk about decolonizing the curriculum or decolonizing the STS department in general, there are so many factors that play a role in this kind of pursuit. The department's leadership might think of it from an administrative angle. The faculty might look at it from the angle of classroom environment, and the students might think of it from the perspective of the culture or the relationships that they're building. But it's also more than just thinking about the different designations. What also needs to be considered are the different backgrounds or the different cultures that all these people, these respective people in the department are coming from. So how does one really create a space in which all these different people can come together and just talk about recentering scientific legacies and talk about their sense of self in relation to how they perceive knowledge. So while I was thinking about this, I was made aware that a few years ago, a group of STS students, mainly PhD students and a few masters, created their own collective in pursuit of asking all these questions. This collective was called Decolonize STEM, and even though it became dormant when COVID-19 disrupted physical learning, I was able to get in touch with one of the members of this collective, Benjamin Wheel. So Ben has been a part of this collective, and they were really kind to give some of their time to me, and they told me some really interesting stories about not just how the collective started, but also the kind of challenges they faced along the way and how they were able to move forward with it. So let's have a listen.
Yeah, so it was 2019 that we started to do this, but we, a couple of the PhD students in the department, myself included, we had been pushing for change within the department, both gently and firmly. So we felt that there was some appetite, but there was some resistance at the same time, you know, in terms of like changing syllabi and also trying to get the department are supposed to be more political. I suppose that was part of it, political with a small p. I mean, just to, you know, STS is a political discipline and has deeply political commitments. And we just felt a little bit like, you know, the syllabi tended to lean white, tended to lean male, certainly tended to lean, I would say, heterosexual in the sense of, like, you know, very little content about sexuality, and certainly very Western. And we observed and knew that there were people who were doing the work. And I think everybody was doing some work. But we also felt that what we observed, as both students who had sat on courses, you know, I was on the master's, Maimana was on the master's at the time, you know, we knew that what was happening was very often, you know, race, gender, and other categories of otherness were getting a week, getting sometimes even just like half of a week on a module. And there was, and that sort of was paying lip service to the broader issues. And obviously I realize we're talking about decolonizing here, but we totally were invested in decolonizing as a project that was bound up in destabilizing gender, race, nationality, sexuality, and so forth. We were very committed to that from the beginning, but recognizing that the primary mission was to talk about race and nation. So again, we tried to push for reform in a number of ways. We went to meetings as students just to try and raise the topic. We pushed for a change to the module feedback form, which would include a section, allow students to voice sections about the diversity of the content of modules. We advocated and ran a session about essentially, what was the term we used? Because we didn't use diversity and inclusion. We talked about, I can't remember exactly what term we used, maybe equity and inclusion in STS, which would be for all incoming students. And it was, you know, an attempt to try to get people to understand that STS, again, was this political with a small p discipline, and we should be committed to certain, I suppose, anti-patriarchal, anti-racist, anti-homophobic, anti-transphobic orientations. And we wanted just to create, we recognized that one of the things we needed to create if we were going to make any sort of change was a kind of more permanent or at least stable space. And that space would be literally a space in the sense that we had an intention of creating some kind of symposium or meeting, but also a sort of more ephemeral idea of a space, you know, a collective that would come together to talk about the issues and to try to advocate for change. You know, and so that was how Decolonized STEM was really born. You know, you notice we were talking, the work we were doing in the department was more like decolonizing STS. But obviously, decolonizing STS is also, again, a concomitant project with decolonizing STEM because it's recognizing both. And so another thing we were keen to do was to try to make the decolonized STEM collective, and we were well positioned within the MAPS faculty to do this, actually, was to include people from the natural sciences as well. Because what we wanted to do was to try to bring people on board who were sort of touching both domains. And we had, again, that was difficult because it's kind of hard to convince natural scientists like the value of these kinds of projects, as in the actual organizing aspect. So that's how it started. And eventually the energies naturally became about organizing the symposium. And really one of the aims and intentions of the symposium, which unfortunately again was sort of slaughtered by COVID, was to produce a sort of guidebook that would emerge from the symposium. And that was a very successful way of doing it. We also provided travel bursaries to ensure that people could come from outside of London who might not have been able to afford it. So we managed to raise funds for that, which was fantastic, with the help of the Welcome Trust. lot of people from the natural sciences came. And that was really, really wonderful. So as I said, we had difficulty getting them to be part of the collective. But once we opened up the space, they really wanted to be there, which was wonderful. And I think spoke to the, I suppose, the gravity of the issue, that we'd, all we did was put out a call and we had people, you know, coming forward being like, I'm on a, you know, a natural sciences degree and I feel completely out of place. I'm the only black person on my course, or people who'd experienced racism in lab environments, or were just had a non-Western perspective that they felt was not represented. So it was a pretty special day, and it is just unfortunate, you know, that as these things happen, the momentum was slain. I think also the department could have done more to solidify and concretize this, the presence of decolonized STEM. We were a group of PhD students with who weren't being paid to do this, it was an enormous amount of organizing labor.
Yeah.
And obviously the nature of being of students is that we come and go. We don't have permanent positions in the department. And once we leave, the space goes with us. Reading groups can be handed down because all it takes is to chair. But the Decolonized STEM Collective was a kind of like, it needed to leave an institutional memory in order to survive. And I would say that there's no one is to blame because there was no single individual. And then, so it's actually really surprised us recently. A couple of the members and I have been surprised that people are still talking about decolonized STEM. Like, it was surprising when you reached out. It's been surprising that like PhD students who are arriving in the department are aware of it, in part because we never put out the output. We never were able to, but also because we were like, well, who's talking about, like, there is some institutional memory, but like, why is it not being solidified? It really ought to be.
My conversation with Ben reminded me of a term coined by a Sri Lankan marine biologist, Asha DeVos, which is parachute science. She defines parachute science or colonial science as, and I quote, the conservation model where researchers from the developed world come to countries like mine, do research and leave without any investment in human capacity or infrastructure. It creates a dependency on external expertise and cripples local conservation efforts. The work is driven by the outsider's assumptions, motives, and personal needs, leading to an unfavorable power imbalance between those from outside and those on the ground. What this kind of model does is that it enables powerful educational institutes and private corporations to benefit from these politically, from the people who are politically dependent on them. And just as a result, their experiences and their accounts of science gain priority over anyone else's. So I really like that term, and you know, just keeping that in mind, I wanted to have more conversations, and so I was curious to talk to people who have made that conscious effort to build and recenter their understandings and approaches towards science based on, you know, incidents or stories that they themselves have witnessed. So I spoke to my academic advisor, Michelle, who is a lecturer at the Department of STS. Michelle told me what exactly decolonizing STEM means to her and how it has played a role in her personal scientific journey. Let's have a listen.
So I remember while doing my PhD, we had a seminar speaker who came to talk about their new book in global technology or something, the history of global technology. And this history, this book, did not include Africa, right? So lots of other places, gunpowder in China, you know, the huge. But there was no African site or technology that was included. And so I asked about this, and their response to me was fairly, shall I say, radicalizing. because their response wasn't that they didn't know. Their response was that there was none, that they couldn't find anything, which I thought was kind of bizarre, to suggest that any kind of people could gather together and live and not develop technology. And you could argue that it's the definition in science of science and technology that matters. So was it a scientific endeavor where science is, you know, this experimental process of falsification and you know, hypothesis testing? And therefore, you know, a lot of things won't fall under that definition, if that's what you're trying to say science is. However, the book clearly included a lot of things that didn't fall under that definition, right? If we're thinking of science as that sort of enlightenment science, then there's so many things that won't fit that were included in the book. And also, having tutored a course in the history of Western medicine, I also found it interesting that the material started in ancient Greece and ancient Rome, and they were sort of seen as proto-scientific. However, what might be considered proto-scientific activities of peoples from other parts of the world never seemed to quite fit the definition of what science was. And so for me, when we talk about decolonizing STEM, it's I feel it's partly that notion of what do we mean by science and who are we including underneath that definition or not including. So I don't particularly care about the, you know, inclusion piece, unless I don't know. Let me try and make this make sense. I care about the exclusion more than I care about the inclusion. And by that, I mean, like, if you create this tent and a boundary, right, and yet it's wide enough to include some things and not others, and it's in a way that doesn't make sense, and that, you know, it becomes an issue, right? So if you had a very narrow definition of science and a lot of things fell out of that, that's one thing. But if you have an expansive view and yet that expansive view fails to include certain ways of knowing and being, then that becomes highly problematic. And so when I think of decolonizing STEM, I think about what's left out and what's excluded, and, you know, what that means for those that are excluded, and what's reparative, right? So inclusion might not be the thing that repairs that. You know, it could be, but it's important to think about what is the best way to think about that issue, right? And in terms of teaching, like I say, it's about considering what it is you're conveying to people about what science is and what it isn't, and who gets to do science and who doesn't, right? And so I remember that particular seminar quite clearly as an inflection point in deciding what my interests were in STS and framing them.
One major question that I've had in mind is how significant of an impact these colonial legacies have had on how science is being done today. And I realized that Western medicine is a great area to explore that because of the universal validity attached to medicine. Western medicine is considered to be one of the biggest tools that the European world used to secure their imperial rule. The notions of race and eugenics have been carried down to today's scientists in a way that still gives an impression that certain ethnicities are inferior and thus can be used as a testing ground to, established medical conclusions. In April 2020, a French doctor caused controversy when he proposed conducting trials in Africa because he said that they lacked masks and other personal protective equipment. And then in June the same year, the United States sent 2 million doses of hydroxychloroquine to Brazil, touted by President Donald Trump, as a possible cure for COVID-19, only to later suspend its authorization for emergency use for the drug a few days later. These are just a couple of the many obvious examples witnessed throughout the last century. And there are many other examples and incidents that reflect that the colonial mentality in more nuanced ways still has a very significant impact on how science is being conducted today. This can be attributed to the fact that researchers from low-income countries are never really given a seat at the table when developing new drugs or new scientific ideas or new technology. Roptel Nijai Paley, a Liberian academic and activist, talks about race as an absent presence in the discourse, policy, and practice of scientific development. She writes, and I quote, "While global domination and structural inequality is built as constituted by economic power, it is reinforced and justified by racial power." Just to continue the discourse and to gain some more personal perspectives on these ideas, I decided to talk to a few students from different backgrounds at STS who could give me some insight into how they feel about this absent presence of race in science. Stephanie Iala, who is a first-year undergraduate student, shared some very interesting thoughts with me on the subject, and I found everything she said to be really profound, so I had to share it with all of you.
I live in an area called Queen's Crescent. A lot of people don't know it because a lot of people don't go there because it's not a very touristic place. But so I grew up there, and their views on science is not the most positive. A lot of the people who live in my area they come from like immigrant backgrounds, or they were born here and they're like working class, etc. But they don't really have positive views to say about science. Most of it is negative. A lot of them, people would label them as anti-vax or they're anti-science, but it usually stems from a lack of understanding, and also the fact that the government has not really put them in favour, like working class people in favour, and like the area in favour, so therefore why would they trust this like science, which they think is a part of the government, like is intertwined with the government. So, and a lot of people, so even coming to UCL, and there was a lesson we did, it was about conspiracy, and a lot of people were like, yeah, like anti-vaxxers, ugh. And I was like, I live in an area with people who don't believe in the vaccine. And I don't think we should be so quick to judge some people, especially if they come from backgrounds where science hasn't really been hasn't really involved them in discussion. They just imposed things and not really allowed them to have a discussion with people in like different areas and stuff. But I feel like it's important to understand, like, these ideas are important to understand how Eurocentric science is. So, like, by acknowledging, like, privilege, power, and race, we are understanding that science is a very exclusive subject, and it's not, even though science is supposedly for everyone because it's objective and thus universal, but it doesn't mean everyone, some people become excluded. And if we use these ideas like privilege and race, we are acknowledging that people are excluded within science, because the people doing the science, or the majority of people doing the science, do not represent everybody. So then that's when things like privilege comes into it. Where, like, who are these scientists and where do they come from? Like, their backgrounds, are they middle class? Are they working class? Like, are they men? Are they women? And you start to understand that it's very, the majority is white, cis, male, middle class background, probably have a trust fund or something. So, yeah. I remember it was one of the lectures we had, and we were in a hall, and it was Kiara, she was teaching it, and then she showed a picture of the scientists sitting down. I don't know what, I know Einstein was in it, I believe, and other scientists, very famous ones, I believe, but they were all white. Mm-hmm. And that was my initial reaction to the photo. A lot of people took that photo as, oh, they're famous, or they're all men. And I was like, well, but yes, but they are all men and they are all white. And I was like, the fact that people were afraid maybe to say that they were white, like as if it was a bad thing, which, I mean, it is a bad thing. All the scientists are white. And the fact that she acknowledged that, that it kind of made it a safe space. Because I was like, yes, people are like recognizing that science can be white, mm-hmm. like white centric, or even Eurocentric, even mm-hmm. and Western, westernized. But it was very important that she acknowledged that, because it, because not only just me being like a black woman in the class, the other people need to recognize that who are non, like, not a person of color. They should recognize that, yes, science is Eurocentric. What can we do about it?
There was one recurrent idea that kept coming up with all the people I talked to about this, and that was that conversations help, even when nothing else can. So even though nobody really knows the ultimate answer as to how we can correctly decolonize STEM or decolonize the world, there are conversations that can help us move closer to deconstructing narratives, creating a space to have conversations like that, to have difficult conversations and to talk about things that matter to other people, just so we can move one step closer towards understanding them, or just towards knowing them better. Because that's also a process of knowing ourselves better. I keep thinking of what James Baldwin wrote in his book that he co-authored with Margaret Mead, A Rap on Race. He wrote that we've got to be as clear-headed about human beings as possible, because we are still each other's only hope. I hope I can remember that thought every time I go in to have a difficult conversation next time. And I hope that that gives you all something to remember as well. Thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful day.
Conversations help. That's a huge takeaway message, I think, from this episode. I just love the pace and deliberation in Roja's work. She got me to stop and listen and think through what I think in some of these cases. Great work, Roja. We'll have more episodes from the STS Newsroom shortly. We're releasing as many as we can over the term break this year for one simple reason. We know everyone's running around a lot these days with the return of so many in-person activities. We're guessing now is the time when new content has a chance to be heard. We're also hoping you have a chance to sample the whole series. Hey, and if you want to learn more about STS Alchemy, just search online for UCL, STS, and Alchemy. It's free, and it's packed with student-written material. Music today included Rollin' at 5 by Kevin MacLeod. It's available at the website filmmusic.io. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you want to find out more about the show, listen to past episodes, or give us some feedback, visit us online. Here's the address, so write this down. It's ucl.ac.uk/sts/podcast. That's it for today. Thanks for coming along, and we'll have another episode ready soon. Until next time, everybody, just remember, there's knowledge to be found just about everywhere, and that together, we are STS. Bye now. You've been listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Subscribe to the show and join us online. The address, ucl.ac.uk/sts/podcast.